Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Advise Show Radio, the station that brings you intense discussions about the hottest topics. Make sure you join us by calling in at 347-996-3350. Now, here are your hosts, Gabriella and the Advise Show.
What's going on, everyone? It's time for Advise Show Radio once again, and tonight's topic is State of the Black Family. Now, as you possibly saw the promo video, we have a special guest tonight, and her name is Najma Muhammad. She also have a podcast called Najma Reflects. She does it weekly. It's a great broadcast on the state of the Black Family. She's a writer as well. She is on Facebook. You know, her page is doing pretty good. So we're very excited to have her tonight on the show to discuss this particular topic. But before we bring in Najma, how you doing, Miss Gabriella?
I'm doing good. Speaking of family, I just got back from visiting mine, so it's nice to be able to get to see them because I haven't seen them in 6 months. So
awesome. Mm-hmm. Family is always good because the previous week, I went to a family reunion, seen some people I ain't seen in a minute. Had some good barbecue and just, you know, a lot of hugging from grandmothers and aunts and uncles and all of it was just great, you know, just to have, my dad's side of the family. And it was with my sister, you know, her kid, and me and my big family. My dad was just tickled to death just to have us all there. And just for us to be there like that, considering, you know, the way I grew up, you know, with, you know, my mom trying to say things about my dad to keep us away from him. It just, you know, it was just great to see that. Cause me and my father, you know, have a great relationship today. And that's why I try to keep a great relationship with my son. But continuing along the other lines of that, we're going to bring in Najma Muhammad to talk about the state of the Black family. So let's bring her in now. There we go. Hello, Najma. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing great. First of all, I want to thank you for taking time out to join us on the show to share your knowledge and everything about the family today. So for people who don't know much about you, can you introduce, you know, yourself and kind of what you do?
Yes, as you said, my name is Najma Muhammad. I have a Facebook page entitled Najma Reflects. I also have a weekly podcast show under the same name. And my message and platform is just about empowering Black women, restoring the Black woman, because I believe that the restoration of the Black woman is the key to restoring the Black family.
Okay, so you feel that the Black women being restored to what she used to be, it would be the way to save the family?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. Let's say before we had these problems, what kept our family structure together, in your opinion? Because, you know, back, let's say, even after slavery, all the way up to the Civil Rights Movement, what do you think kept us together, and what's the difference between then versus now?
I mean, before feminism was introduced to Black women, we didn't have an issue with taking care of our own children. We didn't have an issue with taking care of our husbands. We didn't have an issue with making sure that our homes, you know, were a safe haven for our husbands and our family. There was more emphasis on Black love in those days. And after feminism was introduced, you know, sometimes as women, we get the idea that once we marry, you know, we lose our identity and we have to not pursue different goals. And I get that, but the most dangerous and unhealthy thing that has taken place has been taking the Black woman out of the home and out of the family, because we're leaving our children in the educational system that is not educating them properly. We're leaving our children in the hands of pedophiles. You know, we're just putting our children at risk because we feel like we've been oppressed. We feel like we have to get out of the home, and we involved in a movement that was never for us and never beneficial for the Black family. And so getting involved in that movement, the what you see now is the effects of black women embracing something that was never really meant for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because there's two points I want to bring up. You said about when a black woman gets married, she feels like she loses identity. But, you know, that's the problem. When you get married, and you know this as well, being a married woman, it's no such thing as I, it's us. And this identity, we need to build this identity together as one family unit.
I think that women, we focus on so much what we think we're losing, not what we are gaining. Because I even have heard women that are married say, I'm still strong and independent, and you're in a marriage. No, you're not. Because a marriage is the merging of two people to create a union. And by identity, you know, I even have struggled with that when I had my first two children, because I just didn't want to be known as just their mother and just somebody's wife. You know, I still have my own aspirations too, but we have to find a way to merge everything in together. You know, being a mother and a wife is a beautiful honor, but we look at it as, oh, it's slavery. I'm just going to do this, I'm just going to do that, instead of really seeing what the beauty of being a wife and being a mother is. You know, those two roles have been discounted. You know, marriage isn't pushed in our community. Side chicks are, mistresses are, you know, so we don't get a lot of focal point on, like, why get mocked? You know, side chicks are like, oh, I feel sorry for the wife because I can get all these things that a wife can get, and I'm a side chick. So we live in a community where wives and submission and building a strong family union, those things are not pushed in our culture. Everything else but is. You know, we have baby mamas, we have jump offs, we have women that are very sexually charged. You know, we don't think about building relationships. We're thinking about getting paychecks or getting physical needs met. We don't think about the importance of, you know, as a woman, choosing who you let inside your womb and who you reproduce, and as a man, who you choose that is worthy of reproducing you. You know, sex has turned into a recreational sport. So when we live in a society where it's just sex, 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 there's no emphasis on families, and many of us come from broken families, and we struggle to even set the correct example. So it's a difficulty there, because marriage is not something that's popular. Marriage is mocked these days.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, something else you brought up about feminism. And, you know, one thing I always say to any, you know, black woman who has an idea about, oh, I'm a black feminist. First of all, you know, I always tell them that beef between white women and white men has nothing to do with you. White women were just a little bit above the Negro during slavery. That's the way he looked at white women. He oppressed his own woman. Think about it. All the slave masters was cheating on their wives with these black slaves. You think them women didn't know the smell of another woman on their man? Having all these babies with these slaves? I mean, white women deal with a lot. So, of course, she would rebel against her man. But what I don't like is, and a lot of other groups do this, they know us as black people got big mouths. And when we speak, it carries. And they want to use our voice to promote their message, and black women were played by the feminist organization. And to think that, oh, be against the black man, was, like I said, we never held black women down from getting jobs. We never oppressed black women, beat them down, hung them, all this other stuff that was done to black women. We was all, like I said, done this stuff together. And, you know, we look at cases like the Marissa Alexander case in Florida. Do you see any feminist groups coming to her defense? Where's Gloria Allred and all the other stuff? They never defend black women when they need defending, these feminist groups. Why do you think black women continue to think the feminists is with them when they never defend them?
I don't know. That is a very good question. Again, we think that we are in solidarity with a group of individuals that never had our best interests in heart. And that should even go back to the days of slavery. You know, we're always given the preconditioned idea that white women were better than us. And so that could be another reason so many of us try to be exactly like them, because all of us, you know, suffer from the remnants of slavery. So we could be joining a movement because in some of our minds we think that white equates right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like as long as white women are doing it, then we have to do exactly what they do. And I've even noticed that when I've said certain things about even behavior that is horrid or filthy, the first thing women will say, well, white women do it. So just because white women do it, it makes it okay, you know, for us to do
yeah.
it. It just shows that a lot of us have that idea that white women are somehow still better or at a different level, so we're trying to reach that level when reality is that this is the movement that tore our families completely apart, and we still, for some reason, want to follow a movement that never had the best interest of black women nor the black family in mind.
No, they never did. There's actually an iconic picture and quote that comes from a woman that started the whole Planned Parenthood thing, and she was talking about how she was just saying that they kind of wanted to exterminate black people, which is why they push Planned Parenthood and they push abortion in our community. It's not that they don't care about us, and I'm not trying to be racist or anything, but it's that this whole feminism movement, this whole women's pride, I mean, it's gotten to the point where I see black women holding up signs saying proud slut. I have seen black women walking around or taking pictures with pasties, you know, with just their nipples covered.
Right.
And they'll be writing feminine pride on their chest and paint with their fists up in the air. And they really think that they're embracing some type of women's liberation movement by sleeping around with this man and that man, not knowing the effect that it has on you. They feel like, oh, well, you know, it's my right as a woman. I am, you know, I'm a woman, hear me roar, whatever. And they really think that this whorishness that is pushed by the feminist movement is something positive, and that's caused so many problems in our community. So I've looked at pictures, like you would see pictures and videos of women, like only 50 years ago, women were beautiful and they carried themselves so well. But now you can look at you can just Google search black women and all you're going to see is some of the most vile, ratchet, despicable behavior. It's embarrassing. It really is, and it's sad that we've fallen so far.
And I definitely agree with you, sis. I made a post maybe about a week ago, and I was talking about how we as black women have embraced boredom, and I was accused of slut shaming. And I'm like, are we not ashamed? You know, we should be ashamed of this behavior. The problem is too many of us are proud of these sluts and whores, which is the problem. But whenever you try to address it, you know, like you said, they think this is liberating. Like, to have sex with whoever you want to is not liberating. You're just being a slave to your lower desires. You know what I mean? Like, discipline is something that's worth striving for, but giving yourself to just anybody, like, that takes nothing. And I don't think women even understand or realize the emotional wear and tear that does on our bodies. And a lot of men are not in the business of wifing up women that are publicly or self-proclaimed whores, you know, or sluts. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that women see maybe like Amber Rose or Kim Kardashian or, you know, things like that and be like, oh, okay, well, they can get wiped up. But I don't know many black men that are running through stripper clubs or just, hey, I'm holding a sign saying, hey, I'm a whore. Really? I really want you to be my wife and have my children. You know, black men just aren't doing that. So, again, you know, we are just embracing movements that totally disrespect us and that have totally dismissed the masculine principle in our homes. And that's that's reflective of the number of single parent homes ran by black women and the custody battles, the child support battles. Like, we keep telling men that they're obsolete and then we get upset when there are no men around.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to travel back in time when we started having this breakdown of the family and just hit it point by point. And one of the first things that we noticed that we had a breakdown at in our family is when the welfare system came in and the welfare system said, you cannot have a man in your household.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of our people took the welfare, which they never had before. We never had welfare. We never had food stamps. We never had child support, none of that. We had to do what we had to do. Yet we took the bait, then people come check your house. And a lot of the men left. Unfortunately, they left. Because, you know, other groups was getting welfare, too. Like I stated in many times, I've done the research. White people get way more welfare than black folks do. Trust me, they do. But yet, their family's not broke up because of it. And why is it that only our family has broken up? Hispanics get welfare. Asians, I'm pretty sure at times, if they need it, may get it. But our family suffered the most. So why do you think, Najma, that the black family was starting to unravel once welfare came in?
I mean, it's very all strategic, brother. The whole idea is to break up the black family. And once we were placed in a position where we were able to rely on the government to give us everything as far as housing, food stamps, daycare, everything of that nature, what will we need a man for? So the whole idea was to push the black man out of the house, being him worthless, that he couldn't contribute to anything. And this is how we came upon this false sense of I'm a strong, independent woman, because there's nothing independent about you if you're relying on the government to assist you in your way of life. But the idea is to make the black man seem like nothing in the eyes of the black woman. And that's why one of the first things we'll tell black men, we'll tell them everything that they aren't. We'll say, you aren't such and such. You don't have this. You don't have that. We are quick to flaunt what we have and everything that they don't have, because when we got put on a pedestal, you know, above them. And so we look down on black men because we're like, oh, you can't provide for your family. We never gave them a chance to provide. We came running to the safety of government, which was really, we ran into unsafe arms, because that's what destroyed our family. So now black women feel like they can rely more on the government than they can do a man, and are quick to tell men what they can't do, but don't realize that, you know, that this is the effect of what we started to rely on in the beginning. So this is why we have a lot of homes that are without the black man, because, as you stated, in order to get certain assistance, you can't have a man in your home. So instead of trusting our man and working together, we felt like, I can rely on this white man's system, his government, instead of this black man in my house. And that thinking has been recycled from generation, generation, generation. And this is why you have young girls now that don't even want to get married, because they're like, well, I can't collect child support, and I can't do this, I can't do this. And this is because this is what they're seeing their mothers do, their grandmothers do. So this is a cycle that has trickled all the way down. And, again, this is what we're seeing as a result of that.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, and you see what saying, well, they say tell the black man he's worthless and things like this. I had a woman in my comment section told me that black women feel that black men are worthless and they no good. But the only time that y'all take care of y'all family and get married is when you with a woman that's not black. So that tells me that obviously if he's doing that, that means he's worth something, don't you think? And what is it that you're doing wrong that they're
that's
doing
the
right?
Thing. A lot of the, this a is lot like of the problem is that black, I'm sorry, cut you off.
But I was going to say, this is the thing that gets,
okay, that's okay. Hold on, let's stop. Najma, go ahead, then Ms. Gabriella.
All right.
Okay. The thing that gets me about that, we have been telling black men for years that they're no good. We don't want them. We don't need them. So if we tell them all these things and they find what they need elsewhere, what right do we have to be upset? Who's going to stay where they're not wanted, where they feel like they're not loved, they're not appreciated? And how is it possible that this same so-called group of worthless men can be with another woman that can see his value and can see his worth? And after this whole Jeremy Meeks situation, I don't really feel sisters have a right to talk about black men being with white women after we just completely drooled and fawned and disrespected ourselves over a brother with a white woman. See, that's that hypocrisy that we like to keep hitting. We tell black men, hey, you're no good. We don't want you. We don't need you. But then we get all this shock when they're with other women. Like, why would they continuously try to build a relationship with a group of women that is telling them that they hate them, that they don't need them, that their children don't need them? So, of course, a black man is going to go elsewhere if he can't get what he needs in his own community. That's just common sense.
All right, Ms. Gabriella.
All right. So I think the problem with the reason why black men supposedly run off to other races, which is not true, because according to statistics, when black men do get married, they usually do marry a black woman, but contrary to popular belief. But I think the problem comes from black women not knowing how to be a wife, because if a pastor, say, or a man in authority was to get up in front of a church and was to make a sermon about how women should be submissive, do you know how many black women would get upset? There's a lot of black women that don't understand. They just don't know how to be a wife. They don't know that a woman is supposed to be submissive and she's supposed to respect her husband as the head of the household. But the problem is that they never had an example of what a man should be. They were raised by their mother, who was raised by her mother, and her mother was probably raised by her mother too. And so they don't know how to treat a man. When a good man finally does come their way, they don't even know how to treat him, because they're so used to being dogged out and treated like crap that when a man does finally come their way, they don't know how to handle it. I've had so many black men come to me and tell me that they've had women say, oh, well, you're too nice, or you're boring, or it's not exciting, or, I've even known some of my old friends who would chase after men who would cheat on them and openly cheat on them in front of everyone, in front of their families even. And they would still stay with the guy because they like the excitement, they like the thrill. They're not used to, like, they don't have that example. They don't know what a man is supposed to do in the house. All they know is a man is only good for one thing.
Okay. Well, this is my thing, what you just said about the example. Well, it's kind of like if you never learn how to cook, what you're going to do all your life, you're not going to cook just because you wasn't taught how to cook. I mean, you can learn on your own. Same thing with anything in life. If you didn't have a dad around as a man, you can get around other men, and they can give you some, you know, fatherly advice or some instruction. Same thing with the women. If you may not know what a good man is, but you can get around some women who are good, reputable women, and women, I would say, who are married in great relationships and could actually tell you what's a good man and what's not. But the problem lies, women want single, advice from females that they not came to keep a man. With that said, we're going to go ahead and start taking calls. I see a lot of calls sitting on here. And, you guys ask the questions, and because we got to get to other calls. So let's go ahead and go to the first call here. Let them know what this is. Area code 727, you're on the show.
What's going on, Bosco? It's J.M.
What's going on, man? What's on your mind?
Well, it's just like, my God, I'm enjoying this conversation. It's just about why good, like you said, about what's the name of the show topic? Just to be sure about what the state of the black family.
Yeah.
We as brothers and sisters, we need to get closer to each other. We got to stop talking at each other. We need to listen what we got to say. You know, like, I was just talking to some people, right? It's just like, they just not used to, you know, if you talk at the same time when I'm talking, right, it's just no communication. What we need to do is stop, let the other person talk, and we got to listen. And we really got to start embracing each other. I'm just tired of seeing black women versus black men, vice versa, you know. We got in this world, you know. I mean,
okay. Okay, do you have any questions for our guest?
Yes, I do. Ms. Muhammad, what can we do to solve the gaps between black men and black women? How can we overcome those gaps?
We have to have some very difficult conversations, and the reality is that black women, we don't want to have an honest conversation. We want to have a conversation where you all are holding the blame as a bag for everything, and that's just not the case. So until we as Black women are able to have an honest assessment and be accountable and acknowledge the role that we played in the destruction of the Black family, it's always going to be this tug of war, because no matter what Black men say, we're going to always have some type of default defense in the chamber ready to fire back at you, and it's going to make you take the blame. We don't want to be held accountable for anything. So it's going to take a lot on the Black woman to be like, you know what, I did make some bad choices. I did do this. I have blamed men for the actions of other men. I didn't choose wisely. I let my bitterness take control, and I was led by it. We have to be able to be honest with ourselves, and then we have to be honest in front of you. See, we like to put you all out in the spotlight, but we run from that spotlight. I mean, we scatter from that light. So we have to be bold enough to face the mirror and step into the light and say, Black man, this is what I've done. And until that happens, we're never going to have any progress, because you can't have progress when the other half of the conversation is being dishonest.
Yes, and I agree, with all of you guys. It's just every time we keep fighting against one another, like, everybody else is building up their economic structure, their family structure, their support networks, and we're fighting one another. You know, we got to really embrace each other to build our family networks and our economic infrastructure as a Black community. Otherwise, we're going to be reduced to rubble.
All right, with that said, thank you, JM, for calling. Let's move on to the next call. Let's see who we got here. Eric code 707, you on the show.
Hey, what's going on, Phil? How you doing, brother?
How you doing?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Out here in Cali, man, trying to stay cool. My question is this, you know, it's along the lines of what the other brother was saying. You know, how can we as Black men, because I love Black women, and that's all I date, and that's all, you know, I want to be involved with. But there's sometimes, there's just a, it seems like there's just a shut-off point where, you know, we shut each other out. I know in the relationships I've been involved in, and I'm just, you know, it's just a disconnect. You know, and that's my question to you. What can we do as Black men to kind of bridge that gap between Black men and Black women?
Are you asking me or Najma?
Najma.
Najma.
I'm sorry. Sweetheart.
It's okay. It's not an easy name. So you want to know what Black men can do to try to change the gap?
What can we do to bridge that gap, to make it like it used to be, you know, because I know that our examples of Black women, I'm in my late 40s, so my example of Black women were great, and I had a lot of, you know, strong Black women in my life that gave me an example of what a good woman, you know, is, you know, as far as being married to. But nowadays, it just seems like, I mean, there are good Black women out there, but it just seems like a lot of people emphasize on the negative in our community rather than the ones that are doing things. And my question to you is, how can we fix this problem?
Okay. Well, I don't normally speak on what Black men should do. I'm more in the lane of what Black women should do. But I feel like just both as a whole, we need to, especially Black women, we need to learn the true definition of reciprocity. So many of us want, but we're not willing to give. So many of us want to be heard, but we're not willing to listen. So many of us want us to see your side, but we aren't able to look at things from your vantage point. Again, it's going to take having an honest conversation before that gap is bridged. And I also think that as far as men, you know, you all have to, you know, make it known that you're not going to be the Black woman scapegoat anymore. You have to make it known that you're not going to be the go-to guy for all her bad decisions, you know, and I feel like the more Black men speak up, and don't enable and coddle the black woman and our victim mentality, that would send a very direct message to black women, because as long as black men are taking it and not saying anything, your silence is co-signing this type of mentality. But you all have to be more vocal and say, you know what, you have to be accountable. I'm not going to let you blame this on me. You know, black men, you all just can't continue to be quiet. You have to have your voices in the mix. You have to have the sides of your story told, because, you know, for over 40 years, we've had a stage to paint you in whatever light you want it to, but you all have to push back and say no more. We're not going to stand for this. And when you all push back, it's going to give women no other option but to look at ourselves, because if you are saying, I will not, you know, take the blame for what another man did, I will not hold the consequences for the choices you made, then we have no one else to push that blame on. But as long as you are quiet about it, then we have the opportunity to continue to deflect. And the whole thing, we want to stop deflecting and start reflecting and looking inward. So that's my advice for black men. Just reject that victim mentality. Don't coddle us as black women. Don't enable us. You all have a voice. You have to use it, brother.
Well, Naja, you know, I'm a complete alpha male, so that's one thing I don't do is coddle. That's just something I don't do, and I think that's the issue that I'm coming into, because I'm just not the one that's going to tolerate a lot of foolishness. I don't want to hear about your past relationships. I don't care about your past relationships. You know, you're dealing with me. Let that go. You know, we've all had past histories that weren't, you know, too great. So, you know, if I can set my issues aside, you need to set your issues aside. So I think that's where my problem is. You know, like I said, I'm a true alpha male. I just don't like to tolerate a lot of stuff. My household is my household. I do compromise. I don't mind compromising and working together to build a life together. But as far as just drama, foolishness, you know, just a lot of stuff that's just negative, I refuse to have that around me. So that's just,
I mean,
you know,
the reality is, brother, is that we have to cut out all the simps. You know what I mean? All the brothers that are simps, that are enabling, you know, that are like, woo, woo, woo. Like, as I continue to work on the black woman and helping her to accept accountability, I need y'all to help me with them simps. Because as long as we have simps in abundance, We will continue to have unaccountable black women in abundance as well.
Yeah, but you know what's funny though, Naja, is I'm going to speak on something that you had spoke about earlier. I was with I was married for quite a few years, and my ex-wife was she surrounded herself around folks who were in very negative relationships, weren't even married. And we actually built a lot of stuff together, bought real estate together. The kids needed nothing, you know, I worked hard. And what happened was a lot of the negativity that she brought into the household basically brought down the relationship that we had. And it's funny, we're friends now. I mean, we get along for the sake of our children, but she realizes she pretty much messed up. And she has told me that. And
that sounds familiar.
You know, huh?
I said, that sounds familiar.
Oh, man, yeah, brother. It's, you know, and it's, you know, and like I said, I work hard. You know, I'm not sitting here saying I'm perfect, but I am far from, you know, I'm not perfect. You know, there's things I need to work on myself, but, like, you know, on the same token, I know how a man is supposed to be in his household. I know that I'm not going to bring no men other negative outside stuff into my household. Your house is your sanctuary. You protect your family. And if a woman that you're supposed to be with is supposed to be the same way. Hey, this is my household. I'm going to respect my man. I'm going to respect my kids. You know, don't bring this in my house. This is my man. He takes care of me. And like you said, you know, I don't think a lot of women, black women, are nurtured or taught to do that or taught to be, you know how to be a wife. It's so easy to be, they know how to be maybe mamas, but they don't know how to be wives. And that's just my thing. That's my spin on it.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, you know, like I did that. I don't know if you saw that video I did about the little boy, and I said, you know, how they're grooming him to be a thug. You know, a lot of our little girls.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I saw that.
They grooming them to be hood rats. I mean, that's going to be the next one coming up, grooming them to be hood rats. I'm just waiting for the right time to put that one out. And, you know, a lot of these girls aren't even allowed to be little girls because sometimes they got hood rat mamas. They're having 4 or 5 kids and making these girls take care of their kids and just taking their life from them. And are they jealous of them because they ruined their life and their teenage daughter got her life? And sometimes they just go run to any old guy out there to be with. Because, you know, I mean, she's want to get away. I mean, I've seen kids put in that situation, you know, girls in our community, and it's sad to see that. So it's just a lot of variables
It is sad. And, you know, I have a friend of mine. She's a good person, and she just got herself together. She'd be a good woman, but she's stuck in that mode of, I didn't have a life when I was younger, you know, now I want to be, you know, I'm 38 years old, and I want to be 21 again. You can't do that. You can't relive that. And here you are. Your kids are acting out, doing stuff that they basically see you doing, and then you won't get on their case. How can you get on your children's case for doing what you exposed them to?
I definitely agree with that. But, brother, I appreciate you calling. I'm going to put you back on mute because I got to get
some
more
stuff. All right, it's always good talking to you, brother.
All right, it's good talking to you, too, my brother.
All right. Bye, Nigel.
All right.
Bye.
All right, Ms. Gabrielle, you want to add anything before we get started with the next call?
I wanted to add in, because you were talking about grooming a child to be a thug, but I'm not sure if everybody saw the video, because you had it on your website. We had...
Oh, that was on YouTube.
No, the video about the... I was going to say something else. The video where there was women encouraging this little girl to dance like a stripper, and they thought it was cute.
Oh, yeah, that one. That was on my website, yeah.
That kind of behavior is being... I don't even know what to call it. Because in our community, we glorify this kind of stuff. I said it on the last show about how the reason why a lot of women are living such ratchet lifestyles is because the women that are upstanding women that are doing something positive, they don't get any attention. And they're like, okay, well, if I emulate a stripper, if I go out and party every night, if I drink and I behave like these women in these rap songs, maybe I can get someone to pay attention to me. Because it is hard. If you're trying to be a woman of virtue, it's hard to get someone to date you. It's hard to say, you know, I want to save myself from marriage. I want to, you know, I don't want to go to the club every night. I want to stay in the house and watch a movie or something. You know how hard it is for a woman to deal with that in this day and time? So a lot of women decide to basically act like someone that they're not just so they can get some attention.
That's the wrong attention as well, though. You don't want that kind of attention.
No, you don't, because that's not long-lasting. But
okay, so we go ahead on to the next call here, who's been waiting in line. Area code 832, you on the show.
How y'all doing?
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. This is my question. When or how will women start cultivating the positivity in other women? Because I think, as far as our sisters are concerned, from young age to old age is cultivating a negative culture. Because it's just not negativity towards men, it's negativity towards women too. And everybody kind of lets it slide. Like, drama is the way it's supposed to be.
Well, I feel like it's going to have to start... It's going to always have to start with women, you know. And when we're ready to see a positive change in black women, we have to make that change. We have to be entirely fed up with the images that we put out there. You know, our children are watching us. They're watching our movies. They're watching what we're watching on television. They're watching how we dress, what we think, what we say. So we have to make a conscious decision to say, I want to be better, not only for myself, but for the daughters and the daughters of my community. But at this point, it seems like we love a salacious lifestyle. It seems like we love being hyper-sex individual. We love everything that's of this world. We have such a high tolerance for filth and degradation and disrespect of ourselves, that it's hard for us to teach our daughters to respect themselves because we're not respecting ourselves. And when we are attempted to be taught to respect ourselves, we take that as some type of rejection or some type of diss. But the reality is that our children are watching us, and they're falling into the same path and taking the same journey and steps that we want. And as parents, we should want our children to be better than us, not like us at all. And we have these generational cycles, and we say, well, I don't understand why my children end up this same way. It's because we didn't do anything different. Our children are going to continue unless we show them something different, but we have to want something different. And right now, obvious by the different television shows, YouTube videos, whatever, we don't want something different. We want to continue to wallow around in our filth.
Alluding to that, in a sense, the other thing, if you don't mind me asking, is what is the female's humbling experience? Like, with guys, when I grew up around guys, and we had the nice guys and the bad guys, all right? But I did grow up around the gangsters and the drug dealers and all that. But at some point, everybody knew you were going to get that humbling experience, whether you get shot, whether you get locked up, whether you get beat up. Whether, you know, if you kept doing negative things, you were going to reap what you sow. And I think a lot of times it's a curious thing that we really don't see a female's humbling experience. Like, it seems to be more praise that, oh, you did all this dirt. Not just go, you know, just go do your thing. But we can see over time, like, we see women who are older and bitter and upset, but not necessarily saying all the dirt that caused it, or nobody ever actually, you know, exposing them or them having to face the demon that everybody else has to face.
It's difficult for black women to get a humbling experience because we become very arrogant. We become above reproach. And also, we rely on a system that enables us and encourages us to continue in the destructive path. And at the end of that, we get a check for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we get rewarded for this type of behavior. So until we pull away from that system, it's going to be hard for us as black women to be humble because, again, like, we get encouraged to continue to do things that are unhealthy. Even we are so bitter at times that we risk our children. We risk the development of our daughters and her having a relationship with her father because we're bitter. We risk the our son's development of reaching full manhood because we're bitter with their father. So our bitterness totally supersedes all our judgment. It causes us to be emotional. It causes us to be illogical. Like, I don't think black men understand that not only when you're fighting the system and you're fighting a child's mother, you're fighting bitterness. And that's a hard emotion for a woman to overcome. So you are fighting the bitter influence. And influence has such a long-lasting effect. You could be able to be an active part of your child's life, but if they're around you just on the weekends, if they're around their bitter mother 5 other days, you have a hard time fighting against that influence. So until the black woman realizes that we need to pull away from the system, which, again, is hard because we get rewarded for it, we don't really have a lot of humbling experiences. And like you said, it takes us to get older before we realize maybe we had a good man and we lost it, and until something has to really happen with our children, because we get so blinded by our bitterness and our arrogance. That this is why the black woman can't be, or thinks she can't be corrected now, is because she doesn't feel like she has to humble herself to anyone. You know, she feels like she is the reason, or she's been holding the black family down while the black man has left. So we have different degrees of arrogance, while we feel like we are superior to you all. So you can't humble someone who has that superior mindset, because why would I humble myself to someone that I feel is beneath me? You see what I'm saying? So it has to take us being able to really look at ourselves and the destruction that we've caused before we can have a humbling moment. But right now, the society that we live in enables us to be arrogant, enables us to be victims, and doesn't request that we be humble. In fact, it requests that we be aggressive on the attack. of the black man. It requests that we are boastful when we have another black man slave. You see what I'm saying? So we live in a society where black women aren't held accountable for their actions. So if you can't be held accountable, then why would you be, why would you have humility about anything if there's no accountability?
Okay, I get it. Because as a business model, it kind of makes me think. Because normally single mothers are like the poorest, in the poorest bracket of society. And it's weird that if the single mothers are relatively the poorest, then that means then the guys who they're getting the money from are still better off than them. So it would only make sense if you were to, if you get with those guys, you wouldn't be relegated to poverty if it was about security.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, brother, I appreciate the call and everything that was said. I'm going to have to move on to some other callers, and thank you.
Y'all have a good evening.
All right, you too.
Peace.
Najma, I want to ask you a question before we move on to some other callers here. Let's talk about that because I got attacked, I mean viciously attacked, when I made my video about the Father's Day cards for single mothers. And I was cussed out by women. I was called, what was it, sexist, misogynist. I hate women. I had guys threatening me because how dare I talk about their single mom, that's the mother and the father. And I saw you had made a post about this as well as other people. Did you get attacked about your statements?
Yes, I did. But, you know, biology supersedes everything that you feel. You know what I mean? You can feel like your mother, father all day long. But if you have a uterus, you're only one. You can be a single parent and feel like you're taking on the responsibility of a father. In the day, it can only be one. If it takes two to conceive, then it takes two to cultivate. And if you can't, and women, we can't conceive by ourselves, so we cannot do everything by ourselves. And it goes back to us wanting credit for something we're not. Like, we're women. That's it. So why do we want credit on a day that's given to fathers? And I feel like if our children come to us and make us Father's Day cards, we need to, you know, explain to them, I'm not your father. I'm your mother. I'm doing this, but I'm not your father. Like, that causes gender confusion among our children. And if you're in a house where a mother is claiming both to be mother and a father, and you have a daughter and a son, what is that telling your son about the male principle? It's telling your son that he's not needed at all. It's telling your son that, hey, I don't really need to be in the life of my child because whoever I'm pregnant, they can hold it down by themselves. And it's telling your daughter, I don't need a man. So we don't understand how we are setting our children up to be baby mamas and quote-unquote deadbeat dads because of the examples that we are setting. And I found it ironic that as women, you know, were in such an uproar over the baby Catron's little sling. You know,
yeah.
The advertisement that has a, and I'm like, really? This is what you wanted, right? I'm like, why are you asking me? Like, haven't you been saying you're this proud single black mother that's been holding it down? Hey, the marketing company has heard you. So how could mahogany get it right, but this company get it wrong? You get what I'm saying? Like, you can't.
In less than 2 weeks. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And
so
when
I'm
did
like,
my video about the baby. When I did my video about Baby Catan, I was like, oh, boy. But when I was saying that 2 weeks ago, and y'all was just cussing me out. Now, look, you got a problem with this? Oh, no. This is you. This is what you're saying. I mean, which is sad.
Right.
It is sad. Because if they are attacking black women, like I said, you know, I got black women in my family, my children, everything else. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, it's going to affect me some sort of way, but you can't keep publicly putting out that message of an anti-family message. It is anti-family to say you don't need a man because subconsciously, when you tell a man you don't need him, he's going to end up leaving and going with somebody who say, you know what, I need you. I don't like you in my life.
Right.
And
I mean,
that's
you know,
something
like you said,
that...
I found that...
No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, I was kind of tickled by that because I was like, hey, you know, black woman, this is what you wanted. You say, you know, we're single, we're holding down. Like, this box advertised everything that we've been singing for years. You know, we've had that I'm the both mother and father. I'm the single independent mantra, but it doesn't look too good when that picture is facing you, does it? But that's the whole thing I wanted to talk about. Like, you can't keep talking about something and then get upset when what you talk about becomes a reality, and that product is what you have been talking about all this time, and it comes into fruition, and you don't like the way it looks. But how do you think black men feel when they have to hear it?
And, you know, like, and what they don't understand, you can hear other groups of women talk crap about you or to you. It doesn't sting like it does when it comes from black women. It actually has more, just like if a black man says something to a black woman, it stings her a lot more when it comes from us. Because, you know, this is somebody you should be able to trust, you know, and this is the way they're talking to you or saying. And it does have an effect on the psyche of, you know, a lot of young boys, and why they're so crippled today is that we have a lot of black men who are weak, extremely weak. They have no backbone. They're extremely beta male. And they aren't in a position, some of them, to lead a family because they were brought up under that dysfunctional household with no father there to, you know, give him the proper guidance as a young man should have. Mm-hmm. And so we got to deal with so many weak guys today. They have to, like, be taught as grown men how to be men. And, you know, that's sad.
And, you know, I like that you brought that up, because going back to the point that you made before about how just because you didn't have a father in your house as a child doesn't mean that you can't learn how to be a man. A lot of women don't realize that, okay, well, maybe you picked the wrong man. That doesn't mean that you can't find a mentor figure for your son or find a mentor figure for your daughter, someone who can kind of take the role of a father, at least, because not everybody is going to have a father in their life, but you should at least have somebody, some male figure in your life who's going to give you that guidance that you need, because there's just a lot of men that have been feminized by their mothers because it's easier for them. It's easy for you to have your son walking around switching his hips, wearing a purse, because it's almost like raising a little girl. It's harder as a woman to have to deal with more than one, especially if you have more than one child. You have all these, your sons, hormones raging. They want to challenge you for authority in the house, and you don't know what to do. You know?
Right.
It's just sad. We have so much to do, you know, especially like I say, it's black men. And, you know, black men, yes, black women have to correct themselves on a lot of things. But black men as well, we got to, you know, decide that we have to take the lead, and we'll be begging these, you know, because one thing I tell a lot of black men, stop begging black women to get their act together. You the one take the reins and say, I'm not going to put up with you in your condition. I'm only going to get with a sister that is right. And I'm not about to be with these Shaniquas and Laquanda hood rats. I'm going to be with upstanding women. Because as black men, we do play a part in what's going on with our family as well. Because, you know, yes, the hood rats is having all these babies, you know, spending my life paying suspenses, but these boys are the one going out there and doing all the thugging and shooting up innocent people in our community, male and female. So, I mean, we do need to get this stuff together, you know, with the black men and the black women. I mean, because if we don't stop this, I mean, it's just not no good at all. Let me go to another call. See if they've been holding on. Erico 919, you're on the show.
Hello, this is Brianna. And
how you doing,
I'm black,
Brianna?
I'm doing good. And I'm black, but to be honest, I wish I was biracial.
Okay, good question.
Why do you wish that, sis?
It's just that I just want my lighter skin.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've been feeling like this since I was 7. There were biracial girls in my class, and I wish I looked like them.
Okay, have you seen President Barack Obama?
Yes.
Okay, he has light skin, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, his mother is white, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think he gets treated any better than possibly I would get treated?
No, but that's
okay.
Because his father...
Because what?
That's because his father is African, like straight from Africa.
So you think he would get treated better if he if his father was an American black man?
Yeah, a little better.
How old
Brianna,
are you?
Matthew, how old are you, just? Oh, just a baby. I just want to say that, you know, inside the womb is the darkest space ever. And children are conceived inside a dark, dark space. That is the most beautiful atmosphere. That is the most beautiful color because that's where life is conceived and it's where life is cultivated. Like, your skin tone, whatever it is beautiful, sis. And I understand that, you know, sometimes we think that, you know, lighter might be better, but we have to appreciate the way that God made us. You have to understand that there are white women that are killing themselves, trying to tan themselves to death because they want our features. They want that darker skin tone. They want their lips to be full. They want our body structure. You know, we have, unfortunately, conformed to their style of beauty, but they are trying to be like us. We originally set the standard of tone of beauty, sis. So I don't want you to all, I don't want you to feel like you have to be lighter or biracial to be better because you can be as beautiful and productive as you are. You have to love the way that God made you. God doesn't make any mistakes, beloved. So you have to embrace yourself. You have to be the best that God made you to be. And when we don't, we show a growth in gratitude to God. You don't know how embracing your complexion could help another sister be like, okay, she embraced the way God made her. I'm going to embrace the way that God made me. I mean, we come in different hues, shapes, sizes, but we are beautiful. And you have to love the way that God made you. And I personally would like to talk to you offline if you're available to talk to you because I don't want to just talk to you on an open air like this. I would like to talk to you on an individual basis if you are open to it so I can really, you know, tell you more about the beautiful essence from which you come from and the beautiful essence that you are. Would you be open to talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay. If you go on Facebook and type in Najma Reflex, N-O-J-M-A, R-E-F-L-E-C-T-S. I have a fan page. And send me a message on the fan page, and I will respond to you quickly. I would like to talk to you on the telephone because I don't want you thinking that, you know, white or light is better because I want you to love the beautiful blackness that is you, and I really want to talk to you one-on-one about it, okay?
Okay.
Now, I got a question, okay. Brianna. How is your relationship with your father?
It's good. I mean, he's a good dad. He takes care of the family.
Okay. So I'm trying to understand. He always told you you were beautiful and you was a, you know, special little girl, his princess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, like I said, Nash was going to talk to you on one instance, but I'm just curious because it's like I'm a dark-skinned person myself, and I understand you can go through stuff and be ridiculed for the color of your skin. And, you know, and some of the worst criticisms I've ever heard about my skin color come from black people. It didn't really come from racist white folks. And even if it did come from racist white people, I don't care. I kind of expect that from those who are racist, of course. But the thing is, I thought, you know, at least for me, I embraced who I was. I love, you know, being a dark-skinned black man and everything. And it's, I can't, like Najma told you, you know, I see people that you go to the gym and stuff, they're coloring themselves, tan themselves, some of them say looking bronze. And that stuff gonna give them skin cancer. And you got this stuff naturally.
Yeah,
and don't think because somebody mixed or light skin got it better. No, they don't. They really don't. Not at all. You know, but Nash was gonna talk to you, you know, and woman to woman and that'd be pretty good. I'm glad she offered that to you. And everything. So, you know, Najma, thank you for offering that to that sister because you need sisters Absolutely. Like yourself to talk to the younger sisters like this because they really just need some guidance sometime and just to show them to love themselves. And that's what we're about on this show. We want to bring some sort of solution, and that's awesome. So So, Brianna, thank you for calling, okay? And make sure you send Najma that message on Facebook and connect with her because she's offering to talk to you.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
All right. That's hard to hear, you know, that you don't, and you know, this, it goes right back to Malcolm X's message that, you know, who told you, you know, something wrong with your skin color, that to the point that you bleach.
You're about to hate yourself.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, you know, paraphrasing. And, you know, like, I've put up videos about this one woman that, the one I put up, Ms. Gabriella, from, was it Kenya? That woman, she was dark skinned and she did skin, no, she said skin lightening. I mean, paid a bunch of money to become light skinned.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why? No. I mean, is it?
But
this?
That falls back on society because she was doing it to make money. She was saying, you know, as soon as I do this procedure, I'm getting booked. I'm getting flown out here to there. People are telling me how beautiful I am. And the problem is that in our community, we need to stop trying to encourage women that are, we need to just stop uplifting people regardless of skin color. Black beauty comes in so many different shades. I think that's the most beautiful thing about black people. We come in from the lightest of light to the darkest of dark, and I think that we're all beautiful in our own way. And I really wish that these rappers and these entertainers would stop saying, oh, I want me a red bone, I want me a light-skinned chick, and this and that, because there is an overwhelming number of people coming out with these different bleaching creams. Another male makeup artist, he's come out with a bleaching product, and he was talking about how he had his face didn't match his chest, but he actually lightened his skin. His face is Beyonce's complexion, and the rest of his body is almost Alex Lex colored. And that all comes back down to self-hate. And we need to, as a community, teach women that we don't have to put cancer-causing chemicals on our skin, because even if your skin is lighter, that's not going to change anything.
Right. I think that a very good movie that really depicts self-hatred is Imitation of Life. I don't know if you all have watched that movie before, and it deals with a young girl that felt like if she was white, her life would be better, and she had a black mother, and she went through life lying, saying that she was white because her complexion, you know, she felt like she could pass for white. And, I mean, she totally disrespected her mother, called her mother her nanny, and her mother died, and, you know, she grieved the loss of her mother. But that is one of the most poignant movies that shows the power of self-hatred and how we'll go through so many lengths to be other than ourselves, because we have it ingrained in us that white people have such a better life than we do, and we always want to be like them instead of being the beautiful people that we are.
I still go back to what I said earlier. They don't even want their own skin color, a lot of them. They be cooking themselves. I see it all the time. You know, and it's like,
right.
It's like, so how is it that, you know, we don't like our skin color, but others want to darken and, like you were saying earlier, want the lips and want the shapes and, you know, the butt implants and all the injections and all the other stuff. Because I've done stories on women of other races dying from illegal butt injections. Now, all before,
right.
Big butts are supposed to be nasty and all this other stuff. I mean, now, I mean, women of other races, they flocking to get that now. And we just, like I say, I just don't understand it. But let me go to another caller here. I've been waiting for a little while. Air code 757, you're on the show.
Hey, Najma, Philip, thank you so much for the work that you do. I thought it was just me. How y'all doing?
How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. This is AJ. I am a mental wellness advocate. Oh, Lord, don't get me started about mental illness. I will say happy National Minority Mental Health Month, which is July. But I just wanted to offer just a couple of things here. I like to say what's raising our children is contradiction, okay, because, yeah, Roe v. Wade, welfare, women working outside the home, it really did a number on us as far as I'm grown. I could do what I want to do. I don't need a man. Okay, fast forward, and then we had crack hit the communities. Okay, I like to say make it worse. But think, we tell little girls you need to keep your legs closed, then tell boys go throw your oats. And I know you did something about this a couple weeks ago, Philip, telling 7, 8, 9-year-old kids you're the man of the house and can't figure out why he has an attitude problem. Then you start saying the whole do as I say, not as I do, but forget the example that we're showing. So I said, okay, so basically you have grown boys and grown girls calling themselves parenting a bunch of kids they won't stop having. And then that begins the cycle, you know. And if you think about it, we enable our boys a lot of times and tell them that, hey, you can stay home. He's trying. And we tell our kids, especially our girls, when they're in school, well, you know, the boys like you. That's why they pull your hair. That's when, you know, how come they're being physical with you. Then when she grows up and a man gets a whoop in her tail, well, he said he loved you. You can stay. I said, okay, y'all got to make up your minds now. We're telling the kids too many different sides of the story, and we wonder where this independent hear me roar comes from. And when our kids try to talk to us, it's, you know, you're too young for problems, you're too young to be depressed, all of that nonsense. And they'll wonder why they get on social media and kill themselves. You know, it's not just me. I'm like, okay, our kids are more desensitized. They're committing suicide and unspeakable violence more than we've ever seen in the history of our nation. Is it just me? I don't think so. Hello?
All right, we here. Naj, we got anything to respond to that? I mean, I was making sure your monologue was over.
I get on my rant. Like, what are we doing to our kids? You don't see this in other cultures.
But I will speak on, like, you know, in the Black community, we don't really get the help for our family members that suffer from mental illness. You know, we might get them some Jesus or send them, you know, we're going to pray them up real good, you know. But we don't understand, like, you know, there's some type of imbalance that goes on. We can like, oh, that's just such and such, and we just discount it. But we have a bad habit of, you know, ignoring that in our community. And I know I personally have dealt with that. Someone very close to me, you know, has dealt with she's bipolar. And I've dealt with that, you know, majority of my life. And I understand, you know, I have to really learn her and know, okay, when she's having an episode and how to take care of her. And a lot of times we just push it underneath the rug. We don't even understand that trauma also causes imbalances, you know, in our life. You don't have a way to healthily express trauma, whether it be rape, being molested, you know, feeling abandoned, whatever, that also comes out in different ways. We can act out, we can become aggressive, we can become violent, or we can, you know, have it can impact us mentally. So there are several factors, but we aren't always willing to investigate those factors. Especially in our community, we'll be quick to put our children on some medicine, you know, let somebody tell us our children need Ritalin to calm them down. We don't want to delve into why our children might be acting out, you know, because sometimes children don't know how to fully express what they're feeling. And acting out is the only way they can get whatever aggression or hurt and pain out. And we want to chastise them for the action or really the reaction, but I want to dig deeper and say, you know, what is going on with our child or children. We are quick to dismiss our children ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we are quick to dismiss our children. Who's going to come in and take care of them? Who's going to come in and really try to see what's wrong with them? And, again, we are quick to send them to these people that will medicate them because they'll make money off of that. You know what I mean? So
right.
We have to be responsible and really have conversations with our children. And as parents, we have to deal with our own trauma because we don't know how it's playing out and how we parent our children, how we deal with, you know, our children, how we deal with men. And a lot of things that trigger us, you know, are nestled in our subconscious, and they can be traced back to our childhood. But we're so quick just to push something underneath the rug. And I'm like, lift that rug up and let's deal with it, because we're having too much stuff pushed under the rug, and our community is suffering because nobody wants to talk about it. And I mean, not just talk about what women go through, because little boys get molested, they get raped, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we seem to always focus on what, you know, we want to save our daughters, but what about saving our sons as well? You know, we got to be willing to save everybody. You know, I can't say I'm just going to, I have three children. I can't be like, if something happens and I can only save one, I'm going to try my best to save all three. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not
exactly.
going to make a choice to say, well, this one is going to suffer. This one's going to suffer, but I'm going to take this one with me. And that's how we are. We have to be willing to look at ourselves and say, what are we suffering from? What happened in my childhood? And for Black men, and then in general, it's especially hard for them to talk about their feelings because there's a social stigma attached to Black men showing emotion from any hurt and pain. They always have to be told to toughen up, even among their wives and girlfriends. You know what I mean? They don't always have the safety of saying, you know, babe, this is what happened to me. Because even in their homes, they're mocked, and we condemn men for being for not being emotional or sharing their feelings. And when they do share their feelings, we have an issue with that.
Right, and we tell them, you know, you need to man up and you need to this. I said, okay, you're complaining that he's not communicating with you, and then when he tries to, you tell him that he's whining or he's complaining. We don't like to talk about things, and that's just a staple, unfortunately, in Black culture at all. Like you said, okay, I'm going to go talk to Big Mama, I'm going to go talk to Pastor, and excuse me, you talk to some older Blacks. Well, we didn't talk about this in our day, okay? Bingo. That's the problem. It's not that these things weren't going on, but you have a habit of if I don't address it, we don't want the neighborhood in our business now, then that means to go away. I said, okay, two words, reality TV. The one thing I do like about those shows that I hate is you see more Black families going to counseling. And the minute somebody, especially over 50, opens their mouth, they say the same thing. When I was a child and when I was a teenager, and okay, now we can start discussing this stuff. We're not giving our kids room to really open up and say, okay, I need someone to listen to me. It's just easier to sweep it under the rug. It's just easier not to discuss things. And it's easier, like you said, not to be held accountable. Now, I always knew I was crazy, but then I found out that I was crazy when a doctor and a judge said so. I said, okay, how do I break this cycle? That's what I need to do. How do I break the cycle? I was like, I don't want to be like my mom when I grow up. And I said, crap, I'm just like her. How do I break this cycle? So I just had to make a conscious decision that I was not going to do the things that she did, and I still suffer with that today. But so this is what, 2014, I got diagnosed in 2007. But everything that that woman or that man said in that office, I said, oh, my God, this was me at 5, 10, 15, 20. We never discussed anything. We never discussed anything. And, you know, I just think therein lies a lot of the problems. And it's just with, it's not just with women. It's the example that we show. You don't see any other cultures mothers walking around with their grown sons. This is my baby. Okay, he got the contract. He brought you the boat. Get a life. You know, now they're at the club against her. She's at all his games. I said, okay, this don't make any sense to me. Is that your date or your mama? I'm not understanding. So, yeah, this is what we put off on our kids and wonder why the community is so screwed up. Something that I liked, what's her name? Tisha Campbell said with her husband, Dwayne Martin. She said, you know, at the beginning of our marriage, I said, look, you know, I got to take care of the kids. I got to put this family first. He said, let me stop you. You can't take care of anyone if you don't take care of you. Take care of yourself. Think about me, and together we take care of this family. I said, oh, God, somebody got them. You know, so that's where the accountability really, really comes in, to saying I have to break these cycles. Now what are we going to do? Because we enable and emasculate. And then says, well, he trying.
I agree. I disagree with you, Najma, 100% on that. And we definitely got to break these cycles. But thank you for calling, sister, and sharing your thoughts.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Let's got to do two more calls. Does Gabrielle want to add anything before we go to the next call?
I just like the fact that we did bring up the mental health problem because, like, I don't want to just drag this out too long, but I think that a lot of the problems that we're having with these boys being so aggressive and even the girls being so sexually charged, a lot of that does have to do with mental illness because part of the symptoms of bipolar disorder are being promiscuous and overspending and being violent and lashing out. And I think that a lot of black people do have a lot of undiagnosed mental problems that we need to address, but they always get swept under the rug. And we need to, maybe I need to be the leader in that to actually start talking about mental illness, because I do suffer from mental illness too. So I'm not going to act like people with mental illness are bad. But I think it's time for us to start addressing that more in our community and saying, okay, we need to take a stand and stop trying to pray things away. Because, yes, faith can help, but there's faith can only go so far. Faith without works is dead. We need, you know, you have to, because the Lord will only help you if you actually go out there and help yourself. You have to go out there and seek treatment. You have to, maybe if you do need to be on medication, fine. But there, in our community, there's that stigma. It's like, okay, well, I would rather, because in the black community, people would rather run around with an untreated mental illness than to actually say, oh, well, I don't want anybody to know I'm on medication because people will label me and think I'm crazy, okay? But they don't, but then when Advice Show is doing news reports on people, mothers going in and killing their children or shooting up schools and going crazy, oh, well, we didn't know that she had a mental illness. I mean, it's sad.
Oh, let me take it a step further, what you just said. Sure, we don't even want to get tested for STDs. We run around here with all kind of STDs swirling around inside our bodies and everything and passing to everybody. Then you give somebody some sort of disease, you're like, how did you get that? You know good and well that was you. You know, but you ain't getting yourself tested. But you but see, that's what I understand. We don't believe in condoms in the black community because, you know, we just don't. You know, we talk about that little aspect and why we have all these kids and, all you know, three-quarter of our children being born in single-parent households. Because I tell any guy, if a woman tells you from the jump, no, 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 I don't want you to use one, you need to run like hell, run like a runaway slave, going to the Underground Railroad run. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just not even right. I have never touched, when I was single at least, I ain't touched no woman without using no protection. Oh, no. Like, female, I don't know you. You crazy? But it's like that. There's a lot of guys. It's a male and female, not just it's both making these babies. These guys sleeping with them and say, oh, we're sleeping with the thugs. And yes, we get that. But some of these guys are making babies too, not always thugs. Some of them got jobs and refuse to take care of their kids too. And we don't really talk about that aspect of it either. We blame everything on the thug. Yeah, the thug does a lot, but there's some guys not thugs and making babies and just being sorry. So yeah. Let me go to the next call. Well, Eric Cole with all ones, you're on the show.
Yeah, hi. Are you speaking to me?
I am speaking to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hi, the host and Ms. Muhammad. This is Mr. Solution. Just a couple of observations here. Some of the things that you've mentioned, basically they are social issues, social and economic issues, and if you look at, say, for example, Dr. Phil, any day of the week, you will see all manners of maladies. But the difference is that there are resources to address these issues. So basically, all the problems that you have enunciated are issues of economic depravity. And I might say to you very candidly, the only real transaction that's occurring here now is the one where you're going to send Blog Talk the payment at the end of the month or whenever you make your payment. So what happens is you have a group of people who want some sort of redress, and they don't understand how the system in America works. Westernized culture is about economics predominantly. And, of course, because you use the term black. And one of the problems with that is there's no definition for that. No one knows what that is. Now, everybody will think they know what it is, but no one actually knows what it is. And I'll just throw this to you guys and I'd like to dialogue a little bit about this if I'm making some points that resonate with you. When you identify yourself as something and you can't define your identifier, then, of course, that's a problem. Now, the way I escape and answer this problem is to identify with ideas, people who have similar ideas, regardless of their superficial skin hue. And as opposed to trying to get together with people who you think are of your skin color or culture, but they're not of your ideology. They don't buy into your ideas. You take Michael Jordan, for example, and I don't know if he identifies himself as black, but let's just assume he does. Do you think any of the problems that you're talking about impact him? I would say no, not to a degree that he doesn't have the power to surmount them. So I think the issue that is being avoided is the issue of economic disempowerment. You have a bunch of poor, basically uneducated and powerless people just jaw-jerking, just talking. Until they start talking about how to improve their economic condition and really do it, nothing can change. Does that make sense?
Nasa, you want to answer or shall I?
This is my take on it. I do feel that we need to be more educated as far as finances, how we spend our money, where we spend our money, spending our money within our community. However, I don't feel like that is the end all, be all, or that is the end game. That's the only solution. I feel like you can't, I think you made mention of, what did you say, brother, about the only transaction is being done is when the brother pays Blog Talk at the end of the month. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and the products being sold on Blog Talk. Yes, this is the only real definitive transaction that's taking place is when you pay Blog Talk, that is the host. You pay the Blog Talk, right, sir?
Yeah, I pay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's the only real transaction. That's the only definable transaction that's taking place. And if you look at Blog Talk Radio, if I just may just launch into this, because these other issues can be addressed with direct communication. About 80% of the shows on Blog Talk are, I think, so-called black American or African American. I'm just using the common terminology, although it's not clearly defined. And instead of just being renters, they should be owners. Why don't they own an interest in Blog Talk since they love to talk so much? Instead of just being outside payers. So that's the biggest problem that you – in other words, if they would take their money and effort and put it into their local neighborhood, they really don't have communities. Communities are functional entities where you control the major industry within that community. So black Americans pretty much, they don't have any functional communities. They just have places where they eat and sleep. So, but if they own Blog Talk or at least owned an interest in Blog Talk, given all the money, just look at the shows on Blog Talk. I just do these surveys periodically. So, and without addressing the economic problem, you can never, ever solve any of these other problems that you're talking about because they're all generated out of economic depravity.
You know, I can agree with you to a point, but you know what? If you don't have the proper family structure and someone to teach you how to even handle money, it would be no such thing as an economic anything, and that's the problem black people are in today, is that since they don't have the proper family structure to teach your children about business creation, to teach them how to save money, to teach them about the credit system, to teach them about all the things they need to know just to handle their finances just personally, and then you want to talk about growing outside of that, it all goes back to family structure, and we have to lay down a good legacy for our children. That's why we're trying to discuss the state of black family. Once your family's intact and you have a parent or people teaching you this, then you can go out and do what you're talking about. But until then, we're not going to do all that. So what you know, Najma was telling you is that's not a cure-all. What you're saying, if everybody
well, yeah,
has
yeah,
money,
let me share this
wait.
With you because it really is. You just have to see its impact.
You have,
we all know that competition improves the quality of any product. Would you agree with that?
Let me say something. They got rappers with money all day long. They got LeBron James. They got Jay-Z.
That's only a few. You're just talking about a very, very few.
I understand that. I understand it's a few.
You're talking, but let me ask you this. Does competition improve the quality of
Let me finish my point, sir.
And I have a final one as well.
those few aren't doing nothing for the black community at all. They really not. They only focus on themselves. And that's one of the issues in the black community. Now, Donald Sterling, racist he is, he made a point about Jews. And he says, Jews stick together. Jews help each other out. They loan each other money with no interest. But they have to have a community to do that. And black people don't even have that. I mean, it goes back to what Najma was saying. Economics is not a cure-all. You got to get the mentality of the people. But Najma, go ahead.
Right, that's what I was going to say. While I do agree that economics are a factor, it's not the end-all be-all because it's still going to have to start with an individual. As you pointed out, you know, you can have people that have money, don't know anything about trading or investment or anything like that, and, you know, we put our money in things that have no value and that will quickly depreciate. So it's not just about, oh, we need to raise economic awareness. We need to raise awareness, individual awareness first. We need to work in ourselves first because it doesn't matter how much money we flood in our community. There's a lack of trust between and black people in general. We don't trust each other with our money because a lot of times our money is mishandled. We may not give the best quality customer service. We're just not being taught the value of a dollar. We're being taught how to spend it, but also we're being taught how to spend things to look a certain way, to appeal a certain way. We're being taught that, you know, material things override the spiritual part of a person. So it's just not going to be about, oh, once we get money in our community, it'll be better, because it starts with the individual. If we're not better mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, it doesn't matter how much we rise on the economic ladder, the results will still be the same. We'll just be a bunch of people who have more money, and we'll still have the same problems, and we'll still have the same outcome if we don't get the individual correct first.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I would submit to you that the definition of black in America historically has been poverty and powerlessness, where the definition of white has been wealth and empowerment. Now, you guys disagree on the power that money will bring about, but money could actually address all the issues that you're talking about, the ignorance, the anger, the resentment, the distrust, because you could get counselors that would address that. And you could bring in people.
A person would have to first admit that they need counseling, brother. A person would have to admit that they need counseling first. It doesn't matter if it's available to them. If I don't admit and acknowledge that I need it, then what is it good for?
Well, we know that, but see, that's the point. Some people are lost, and you have to go with people who have similar ideas. You guys are trying to save the whole world, but where you should maybe be trying to save a smaller group of people with similar ideas. Because all I hear you guys doing, and I've been listening to you for a while, is just exploring things. I would say individuals should learn how to get money for themselves, to empower themselves first, and then try to deal with people with similar mindsets. Because you're not going to save the whole group. Forget it. They don't want to be saved. They like what they're doing. Does that make sense? You need to deal with the people who are on board with you, who have the similar ideas, and that's regardless of their color. But by the way, what is the definition of black? Who is black? There was an ABC special or CNN special.
Well, I'm going to have to cut you off. Because I got almost 30 minutes to go, and I got other calls. So, you know, we have to continue that another time. So appreciate the call. All right. Let's go to the next call. Area code 252, you on the show.
Hello.
Yes, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. I just want to say that I agree with the previous caller, what he was saying. Just a little bit, but I would just like to add a little bit. So we're talking about the state of the black family, state of the black family.
Yes, what got us here? How can we fix it?
All right. I think a lot of factors got us to this point. I just think a lot of it's is ignorance. And you could say poverty. You could say single mothers. You could say that just a destruction of our family, of our family. You could say is that, and it is that. A lot of that stuff contributes to it. But I think a lot of it just with just the mindset of black people. Are you familiar with a government program called Job Corps?
Yes, I know what Job Corps is.
Okay, well, I used to I worked there in 2011 to 2012, and majority of those kids are black kids, and it's a government program to help kids with who are in poverty or like low income families, broken families, where you can get like your GED or high school diploma and get you a job, stuff like that, you know. And a lot of those kids, of course, like I said, was black. A lot of those kids shared one thing in common, and that thing was just disrespect for the elders. they don't listen to directions. And as I said, a lot of these kids are in poverty, so you just got to think a lot of these kids weren't raised with just morals and just common respect for people. And a lot of the stuff that was there was for free, yet they broke things. So, you know, like stole things, like you could, like what I think the lady was saying, like it's like a mental health thing. Like you got to help people first. Like even though things are free, like there was a place, a psychiatrist place, and half those kids needed it, and it was free, 24 hours, about 24 hours a day, but nobody went. None of those kids went. And it's just sad, man. It was like from age 16 to like 24, and it's just like all those kids shared everything in common. And it's like they're just destructive people, you know. I ended up leaving because I couldn't handle it, you know, how kids are. But that just shows you that, like, no matter what you could take someone out the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of people because, I mean, like, they need to help themselves.
So it goes back
like,
to
I agree.
But it goes back to what Najma was saying, and I agree with that. You got to change the mentality of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
But you like, this is where I agree with the other person, not to cut you off, but, like, you can't help everybody. Like, everybody doesn't want to be helped. There was
we know that.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
We're talking about people that want to be. We can't focus on people that don't want to be.
Okay,
and,
but the people that want to be, it's like, what can we do? What can we do, like, seriously, because,
we'll ask Najma that question. Najma, what can we do? Yeah, go ahead.
I just kind of wanted to go back to the other caller, and he said something about, you know, and again, I don't deny that we need to be educated more about finances, but to say that, you know, and I'm not even sure exactly how he meant transaction, I can only deduce that he meant that the payment that you're making, but you can't say that the only transaction is being made when you pay Blog Talk, because you don't know who we are reaching with these type of shows. You know what I'm saying? You don't know who's listening to this. Okay. You don't know who's listening to this show, previous shows, future shows, and they hear the word, and the word causes movement. The word stimulates the mind. The word irritates them or motivates them to want to be a better person, a better individual. So we can't just have a blanketed statement and say, well, money will cure everything, because the real cure starts with us. It starts with the inside, and you don't know who we will reach by just listening to the show. And if we don't even know, we don't know how our words can make an impact and make a difference and make that individual want to do something that can change our entire community. So while I'm not trying to discount the fact that we need to be more financially keen, you all cannot discount the power of the words either.
That's true, because everybody, I don't know, maybe somebody even inspired you, Najma, to start what you're doing. You know, I got inspired by somebody on YouTube to start what I was doing back in early 2008. I was bored one weekend, and they had this, he's still doing YouTube videos, T-Mod of Georgia. I started watching his videos. You know, he changed his videos he does now, but the ones he used to do in the beginning, talk a lot of stuff about the black community. And I sat a whole weekend and watched them, and then I messaged him after that, and I said, you know, I really like your videos. I said, you know, it really inspires me to want to do them. And he messaged me back and said, yeah, go ahead. Everybody needs to speak, you know, what's going on. And so that's after he told me that and encouraged me to do it, you know, I bought my first little camera for $100. Oh, man, that camera sucked. But my first little camera for $100. And, you know, I started on from there, and now, you know, I'm still doing it to this day. So, yes, YouTube videos or, like you say, radio shows or whatever can inspire somebody. Look at that young sister that called in and that talked to Najma. Maybe she would never reveal that she had an issue about her skin color unless she probably heard this show. You just never know. So you can't discount what we're doing based off of, oh, well, you're paying $39. And we invest a whole lot more than $39 or whatever it costs in equipment. Like you said, you know, Najma, you know, your stuff is, you know, podcasting. I mean, you know the cost into that. You know, I mean, right. It's a lot of things that we're investing in, you know, to put these messages out here. So you can't, you know, discredit that. So let me go on to the
and
next
really,
call.
And really, we're investing in our people. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We are trying to do something to make our people aware and make us better as a community. So regardless of what I have to pay for our podcast, what you have to pay for Blog Talk, if we are able to change lives, then it's worth it. You know what I mean? Like, that offsets that cost, that supersedes that cost, because we're not worried about the price. We're worried about the people.
That's right, because people do change off spoken word. They do. Let me go ahead and go to the next caller. Erico 646, you're on the show.
Greetings, King. Greetings, Queen. This is Brother A-Tone from Brooklyn. How you doing tonight?
How you doing?
Peace, Black man. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm glad you mentioned the last segment, what you just stated, because, you know, the previous caller who was stating that, you know, the cost of the show and everything like that, I just thought that a lot of times when, you know, I do hear productive shows, people usually call in and they talk about, you know, all we do is talk, and, you know, and a lot of times what I'm always interested in is, like, these people talk about they've always, all they do when they hear shows is talk, and they have all these things. And I'm always like, okay, well, what is your idea? Like, you know, what you seem to have, like, all these solutions, so why don't you offer up some solutions instead of just criticisms of what can be possibly done? Because if you really don't have any criticisms, if you don't really have any solutions, I don't really see what you know, you're offering as far as a solution to the situation. As far as, like, the condition we're in, I think one of the things that I don't really see people talk about is, you know, they usually just talk about, they focus on you know, the, say, black children are in disarray or what have you. But, you know, I really don't hear people talk about the reasons and the factors, and, like, the fact that, like, say, the COINTEL program never ended, and, you know, we're getting hit on all these different levels at the same time, whether it be, like, the school systems or the prison systems or the food, you know. And I think if we want to, you know, ask how did this stuff happen, I mean, it was a, you know, concerted effort. You know, someone can just, if you just want to look at short-term history, you can look at the, you know, the civil rights movement and the, you know, infiltration with the social programs and the feminist movement and the, you know, the assassinations and, you know, the subsequent, you know, crack. And then, like, you know, just the homosexual programming. Like, all of this stuff has had an effect, and, you know, this stuff doesn't happen without people, like, sitting in a room and saying, this is how we're going to implement this, this is how we're going to implement this. And, you know, a lot of times when we're discussing these subjects, we just look at the effects. We don't look at the causes. Like, you know, we don't go back several steps to analyze what exactly is going on. We just say, oh, let's just talk about homosexuality. Oh, let's just talk about, you know, what the children are doing. Let's just talk about, you know, the music, not understanding that, you know, even the music is programmed, and they got, like, a COINTEL program within the music industry that's targeted, you know, towards our children. So I think that, you know, if you're going to talk about the stuff that's going on with us, you got to take a grander look if you want to, you know, be honest about what's going on so that you can even, you know, offer a real solution. And yeah, you know, to address it, you have to. It's not just about the money, because I've seen people, you know, who've made a lot of money up front, and you know, their whole mindset is like a European mindset. So they've gotten, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. They you know, hobnob with the rich and famous. They're not looking at, you know, doing any like real programs. I think one sister, she was, you know, I saw her put on a promotional right. video. Sorry,
brother, not to cut you off, but you're getting close to the 2 minute marker on there, because I'm about to get three other callers, because we got almost 20 minutes left, and I'm about to put everybody on a time limit now only speaking. So I appreciate you calling, and Nasra, you want to respond to any of that he said?
No, I think that he made definitely made some valid points. You know, again, nothing that has happened to the Black family is a coincidence. It's also it's always been by design. But as Black women, we don't realize that we have been the pawns. You know, they do the maneuvering through us. You know, some of us are pawns, some of us not so much. And again, that's why my focus is always going to be on the reformation of the Black woman and the awareness of the Black woman, because until we become aware and until we decide that we no longer want to be a pawn in this white man's game, then our family is going to continue along the destructive path that it's already on.
All right. We'll go to the next call. Area code 412, you're on the show. Area code 412?
Okay.
All right, I guess they quiet. Oh, well, you're talking. Hey,
okay,
you
got it.
All right, you got 2 minutes. What's going on?
Hey, I just want to hurry up right quick and talk about, like, during slavery and with us dealing with the oppression, one of the things that's never really talked about with the sisters is the fact that when the sisters are carrying the children, that when us as men or society and what the European was doing to the Black woman at that time was stressing the woman so badly that she would never get a chance to use that energy to bond with the baby in the first trimester. And within the second trimester, then that energy going to the stress, that woman doesn't get a chance to build no confidence with the child. In that third trimester, that woman doesn't, if we're not mothering to that woman, she doesn't get a chance to be intimate with the baby. And some of the brothers all of us will be permanently damaged when we're not doing things in a nature way. As from a science standpoint, nature don't care about who you are. And when these things don't happen correctly, so we have to build, you know, I'm listening to callers calling and talking about money and this and that there, but I'm with y'all, it's talking about as far as family. If we connect and if we understand who we are and what our nature is and how to do things in a science way, then we can produce spiritual babies that will solve all these problems. So everything starts back with the family. And
exactly.
That's something that we have not addressed enough of.
Mm-hmm. No, so we got to
definitely. Oh, yes. I speak on the power of the womb a lot. And, you know, the womb can either be a breeding ground for hostility, or it can be the foundation for your legacy. It's all in the woman that you choose, and it's all in the mind of the woman that you choose. A man has no control over your seed while it's in the womb of the woman. You can contribute to the environment. You can be loving. You can be supportive, but ultimately she controls the environment. I can tell my husband I love him all day long, but if I'm thinking in my mind that I hate him while I'm pregnant, then guess what? This child is going to come out hating him. And so as women, we have to learn the beautiful power that is within our womb and use it correctly. And the reason that the agenda of those who had no, didn't have the best interest of the Black family is uh, in constant being reproduced is because it's being reproduced through the woman. Like, we keep giving birth to children and ideas and agendas that were never good for us. And as Black women, we keep talking about all the power that we hold, but we don't understand the true power that we hold. Like, our power is, we feel like taking a man to court for child support is power. Or we think that there's power in our womb in a seductive way. But we don't think about how we're giving birth, the thoughts, everything that we intake spiritually, physically, mentally goes into our child. So you have children that come out that are hating their fathers as soon as they're pushed out the womb because of thoughts of the mother. So there's definitely a science to mating, and there's definitely a science to how to give birth to productive children. And that's why I always tell brothers, you have to investigate the mind of a woman, because either she's going to hold your child hostage and your child is going to hate you, your child might not be as productive as you want your child to be, or your child is going to be a true reflection of you. And we're just laying down with people having sex, not knowing them, and then our children are getting trapped in the wounds of bitter women. So you come out with these children that aren't getting a relationship with their fathers, that are being, you know, denied relationships because they're in the womb of a bitter woman. You know, like, that has become a dangerous place for Black babies to be, because the mother of the mind isn't right. Just because you can physically reproduce a child doesn't mean that your mind is ready to reproduce a child. So we have to always make sure that you're probing the mind of the woman and not so much the body.
Ms. Gabriella, want to add anything?
No, I'm actually wanting to get ready to the next caller.
Huh?
No, I don't have anything to add, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, let me go ahead and go to this next call. 718 area code, you on the show.
Hi, everyone. My name is LaRavia.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
We're doing good. That's good. I was calling because I wanted to say that I think that society as a whole has used the male and the female against each other, specifically in the Black community. So what was right is being turned into wrong. What is wrong is being turned into right. And that is blocking off, especially in the Black community, because our ancestors have been here for so long. It's blocking off us communicating and coming together and being able to raise our children together. You notice now that, you know, that you hear the phrase, hoes be women, you know, and people, not just the women who are perpetrating those, you know, those actions, but also men are also giving them a platform because they're giving them the attention that they need. But that's just not in that avenue. It's in all avenues. It's, you know, the moral fabric of the Black community is being slowly diminished to the point of destruction.
Okay. Well, I definitely appreciate you sharing your thoughts and everything. Not Ms. Gabriella, got anything to respond to that?
Mm-hmm. I just think that we do need to pay attention to family values, because it's hypothetically, if every single Black person decides to open a business, would that really change the problems that we have in our community? That's just one question I've always asked. But whenever people bring up, oh, well, the problem with the Black community is our economic disadvantage, which is true. We do have problems economically, and that does, and poverty does lead to other things. But at the same time, even if we did have all this money now, we wouldn't even know how to keep it. We wouldn't know how to spend it. We wouldn't know how to invest or to save, because our family structure is in shambles.
So we have to be broke. Buying Jordans like we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And wasting money on other companies and not making our companies, you know, rich. That's what's crazy. Black people spend so much money on shoes and clothes, and yet they don't be making shoes and clothes popular enough. Like you said, Michael Jordan, he's making Nike rich. He's not making himself rich like that. And I never understood that. You know, now, Nash, they ask a question right there. Why are Black people so obsessed with vain things?
you know, to us, that's the measure of success. Again, we have an issue with, and it's not about not having nice things. It's about those quote-unquote main brand things. That's how we measure success. You know, you get clowned in a school if you have on some sneakers that aren't the latest brand, or if your clothes are from Walmart or whatever. You put so much value on material, you know, listed things, and that's reflective in our community. You know, we feel like we haven't made it. You know, we will sacrifice our rent money, light bill money, whatever, just to look like we got $1 million. I'm saying this is how sick it is with us. We rather look like we have some money and not have money than be broke and look like we're broke. You see what I'm saying? Like, we just feel like if we can't wear certain designs, if we can't do this, you know, we haven't made it. And it just goes back to just being good slaves, basically. You know what I'm saying? Like, different plantations, same concept. We're being good slaves. We're working hard for our slave master. And no matter percentage that whoever, you know, Michael Jordan, whoever endorses sneakers, drinks, whatever, the percentage that they get pales in comparison to what the actual company makes. But again, that's us, you know, most of us know how to be good slaves. You know, we don't know how to revolt against our slave master. We're so comfortable being on the plantation. Again, like, there's so many effects that are obvious as far as slavery that are still within us, because all we know is good obedience to our slave master. And we don't trust ourselves to handle business within one another. You know, we had a chance to wear, like, Sean John versus a well-known white designer. We might go with them. Again, we're all in the business of making sure that our slave master is fed well. We take the scrap, and that's the percentage that, you know, whoever endorses, they get the scrap. You know what I'm saying? They're not getting the good food, the good meat. They're getting everything that's left over, and that's what we're accustomed to. We're accustomed to just eating scrap. We don't know what a good meal looks like, how to prepare it. So we're used to settling, so that's what we do.
All right, and, you know, yes, that does go on the black community. We need to get out of that for sure. But I want to thank Najma Muhammad for coming on the show tonight. Najma, how can people find you to get in contact with you on your pages, your podcast? How can people find you?
Yes. Again, you can go to najmaflex.com is my website. That will also lead you to my podcast. Next Monday, I will have a podcast uploaded. It will be with Dr. Boyce Watkins and Marie Zulu Shabazz. We're talking about child support from a male's perspective. Females are always given this side of the story, so I wanted, you know, the male perspective heard and give a voice to those that are often voiceless. So definitely I hope everybody tunes in. You can always go to Najma Reflex on Facebook. I have a fan page. I post it daily. Feel free to message me. And that's how you can get in contact with me.
All right. Well, Najma, thank you for joining us on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure having you here with us and sharing your knowledge and everything. And, you know, we're definitely going to, you know, keep in touch and keep working and networking together.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's definitely an honor. I enjoyed myself so much. The vibe was beautiful. So I would love to do this again. And I appreciate the work that you're doing in our community. And I definitely want to, you know, have some type of partnership or some involvement with you so that we can continue to wake our people up.
All right. We definitely open to that. So, you know, thank you and have a great night.
You do the same. Good night to you, Ms. Gabriella.
Good night.
All right, Ms. Gabriella, you got about 6 minutes to wrap the show up. We have some good information tonight, so Ms. Gabriella, you want to do your thing before we leave?
Yes. I just invite you to check out my YouTube channel. All my links to all my other social media accounts are on there, so it's youtube.com/user/GIGIAYUMU. On my channel, I talk about a host of different topics, and I'm actually thinking about taking requests. Right now, I've been on a weight loss journey, so I've been talking a lot about fitness and health and just pointing out issues with that. But I try to do it in almost in a comedic way, so it makes it more interesting. And I like to have really provocative discussions with people. So make sure you check me out on YouTube.
All right, guys. Thank you, everybody, for joining the show tonight. You know, like I said, I enjoyed everything and the information and the dialogue that we had back and forth. Now, like I said, most of you who follow my videos know I usually try to put out some sort of video after radio show. So, you know, if I don't know if you, any of you guys seem like so disrespectful. Sorry, YouTube comments. I'm tripping up tonight on my words. And you know how that is. I put up videos of people cussing me out and threatening my life and everything else just because of YouTube videos. So I'll put up, I guess, number 7 today. So after the show, you can go ahead and watch that one. Got an artist that made a photo for me and all that other jazz to go along with it. So make sure you tune in. Like us on the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheAdvised Show. If you're on Twitter, twitter.com/TheAdvised Show, Instagram, Advised Show Media. Just make sure you connect with us all over the place on YouTube, you know, the Advised Show TV channel, Ratchet Video Weekly, the Advised Show Media channel. And the holiday will be coming up, what, this weekend? Mm-hmm. Cops going to be out. Don't get none of y'all selves arrested. Because, you know, because them laws going to be heavy on them roads. They already said they're going to be heavy. So, you know, if you're going to drink, buy your liquor, go home and drink it. Don't be driving. You don't do that. I don't want to see none of y'all in jail or kill up somebody. So see you next time.